This is a family affair. You and your husband both come from musical families, and now you have a musical family yourself. From my reading, your children early on, particularly your daughter at the beginning, your oldest daughter, Mary Frances, wanted to get on stage. You were a little reluctant, but eventually she got on the stage, and everyone's followed. How has that worked out and maybe led to the decision to do these holiday shows?
Very interesting journey for us. That we would not have our kids on stage. We probably had two kids and we're like, oh my gosh, we're protecting them from the limelight. We're going to keep them out of the limelight. We're going to not have them on stage. So that was always our mindset. I don't know why we thought like that. We just did. Like, yeah, when she started asking to go on, and of course we were teaching her lessons at home. And, you know, then you get cousins and relatives and stuff who are overly eager and kind of say, oh, have fun, let her go on, you know, and that kind of thing. So, yeah, we let that happen, and here we are 15 years later, and our seven kids be on stage with us, you know, all playing, dancing, singing. You know, this is the journey of life. I mean, we can make all the rules we want, but once you get more living experience under your belt, you can change what was once a hard and fast rule can flip-flop to the exact opposite extreme. So the old expression rings true, never say never. We just, as parents, you know, had to use our internal gauge, and we just were being led to feel that it was okay to have her come out. And from there, we actually embraced it through those years when she was younger. You know, when our next boy came along, who was more eager than Mary Frances, because he wasn't shy at all, and also he was getting see his big sister in on it, so he was wanting to go on with her as well. Then it became like an open stage sort of thing, you know. Generally speaking, we didn't let them go on and run around, but it certainly gave the dangling carrot when we were teaching them lessons behind the scenes, saying, you know, if you can get this, you can get this tune well enough, we'll let you play it on stage. And that became the goalpost. So over the years, a well-deserved honor when they got to the stage. They worked at the tune, and they practiced their steps, and so they got to come be part of the show. And that was very rewarding for them. And also, as the years go on, they discovered the lure of materialism. The tour bus, the shopping malls on the days off, the children's museums on the days off, the hotels and elevators and things that kids love. They got to discover, oh, this isn't just about the music, it's about the fun along the way. And so they very much look forward to going out on tour now. Certainly this tour that we're embarking on is going to be another adventure yet again. And what's wonderful about it is, from our parental perspective, there are no hockey games to go to. There are no gymnastics to take kids to. There's no school activities and events. There's no garbage and recycling to be done. There's no cooking to be done. You know, so all of a sudden, our very busy lives at home shift, and we get to spend more quality family time together on the road.
I saw an old clip on video of the kids when they were younger, and in the middle of their performance, their microphones had to be adjusted, and you came along and someone else did. They didn't break their concentration at all. They kept playing. Even at such a young age, they had such focus. Was that something that was kind of there already, or did they get used to that as they were performing, or you had to let them know how to use the distraction and go with the flow?
It's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of just experiencing it for yourself, and it's a little bit of us guiding them. There have been many times, you know, backstage doing 20 shows, and one of the shows, one of the kids is not feeling well. They're like, you know, I don't feel good, or I'm tired, or I'm sick, or I'm this or I'm that, and I can't go do the show. In moments like that, we don't want our kids ever to feel like they are being pressured to go and perform. We don't want that. That's negative from a young age. But what we do want is then to understand the importance of commitment. We want to raise strong kids. We do this when we're home, too. Strong from the perspective of mind over matter. We want to prepare them for the difficulties of life and the very simple early experiences for them on stage actually are a reflection of what is to come in life. And so in those moments when they say, oh, I can't do this, we say, look, you don't have to perform. Mommy and daddy do. It's our performance time. But you are an important part of what we do. And if you can challenge yourself and use this moment to exercise the power of your mind, I think you'll find that you can do it. Be proud of yourself. There may have been one, maybe two. My point is that most times, if not all times, our children will rise to the challenge. And when it's over, there's a sense of accomplishment that comes with that. As the kids get older, they're also discovering what I've discovered, which is adrenaline supersedes pain. I've been off stage, like, so sick with whatever. When I get on stage, it's the adrenaline overrides pain. It's a miraculous thing, but it happens.
In preparing the show for the holidays, a lot of familiar songs, but with the Celtic flavor and your background with the Breton style, you and your husband have been on kind of different ends of that style, but obviously compatible. How did you go about putting together the program so that everybody got a shot at performing and the audience is going to recognize some of the tunes? And different parts of the tour, you're coming into the United States, which has a slightly different approach sometimes to holidays than elsewhere, to get the show that you really wanted to perform.
For Janelle and I, even though our styles are incredibly different, we have learned over the years how to amalgamate them. And I know when we first started, it wasn't so easy. In fact, we were playing at a party together. We were only married a couple of years. Somebody was recording the party, and they gave us a copy after, and we heard ourselves playing together for the first time, and it was not good. We were like, oh my gosh, this sounds so sloppy, because all of my Cape Bretonisms were covered up by all his Ontarioisms. You know, we were each covering up each other's styles, and it just sounded like a mess. So we've learned over the years how to deal with that. And similarly, too, with having kids and different ages and different abilities, we've learned how to craft a show. And this is just provoking me to realize that anyone else would do the same thing if they were in our shoes, I think. We all have the capability to kind of grow with our growing lives, with our ever-evolving lives. You just, human beings, you use your intellect, and you just go down the road. And if it doesn't work down that road, you switch the path onto another course. So that's really the journey we've had. You know, for Janelle and I discovering that we couldn't play that well together, we realized, okay, we have to shift something. And so same with the show that you're going to see on this tour. You just try things, and things that don't work, you get rid of, and things that need working on, you work on them, and things that are working well, you embellish and you grow from. We were actually just had a group practice yesterday with our family. Everybody's been doing their own individual practicing. For the group practicing, which starts now, we'll do every day. So they'll, in addition to their stuff that they're doing on their own, we'll collect together to see how it works well with everybody. We were making a lot of adjustments on the fly. As musicians, our ears are trained to be sensitive to how things are working together, musically speaking, and we know what sounds good and what doesn't. We know what will translate in the living room but not on the stage, and how to make those changes.
And listening to A Celtic Family Christmas from a couple of years ago, the album that you put out, particularly the 12 Days of Christmas, which is a very repetitive melody, because it's a long song, you count down from 12 and go back up to 12. And it's an instrumental, which is primarily the way that these songs go. I thought it was very innovative and interesting the way you treated that song, which is, as I said, a long repetitive song. The only vocal is Five Golden Rings. Different people sing it. And then as you were covering the different pieces of the song, you had a different instrument, so it was a different voice. That's really a good way to handle that.
Thank you for noticing that. We spent a boatload of time on that. And I just listened to that track 2 days ago. I haven't heard it in 10 years. Like, we don't necessarily listen to our stuff. Actually, I suppose it's 8 years old. But we don't listen to our stuff on a regular basis. Like, even at Christmas time, we don't necessarily listen to our Christmas record. Or we certainly don't hear it all. You just come off tour playing that stuff. You don't hear yourself playing it again.
You're not the first musician to tell me that.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I don't ever compliment myself too often, but I got to say, I friggin' love that track. I love that track. I think it's brilliant. And we did put a pile of time into it and retweaking. And it just started from a little nugget. It was a little, you know, when you're brainstorming, you're laughing, thinking, wouldn't it be great if, right? So it was one of those kinds of moments. We're putting the material together, and I think it was Danelle who came up with the original concept. I was like, wouldn't it be great if we did Five Golden Rings, and it's such a repetitive melody. We just keep getting, like, different instruments to represent the different days of Christmas. But then wouldn't it be even better if we had, like, a vocalist for that moment? Or, hey, let's get different guest vocalists. Oh, my gosh, wouldn't it be great if we got Sarah McLachlan? It just keeps going and going. And then you keep trying the musicality of it, and... well, that's not working. That's working. Okay, that's a great way to connect the parts. Okay, we'll get you to be the lead. We'll get you to, you know, it's just one thing leads to another. And the final result, this is the funny part. It kept evolving to the point where we're almost done recording, and Danelle says, oh my gosh, wouldn't it be hilarious if we had one of the cows do one of the parts, like for real. So we went out back, like we live on a beef farm. Danelle runs that. So we have like 80 head of cattle out our backyard. And so he's like, here we are. I'm laughing my butt off. And he's out there in the field trying to get a lone cow mooing. You know, he's got his voice memos out. And so when you listen to it next time, you're going to hear a moo. And you'll know that that's one of our cows out the backyard.
You can't make this stuff up.
No.
Let's talk a little bit about the release you made earlier this year at Canvas, which has a great cover, by the way. It's like a Jackson Pollock kind of situation with the splatter.
I did think of him when we were doing it.
I was going to ask about that. This is a collaborative effort, as a lot of music is, especially these days. You brought in some folks that, I don't know whether you're friends with them, you just ran across them. I mean, you've got Yo-Yo Ma, Rhiannon Giddings, I guess Robin Cunningham is a friend from Canada, and Elmer Ferrer. It's very interesting listening, and the fusion that was kind of described in the case of the mysterious Squabby Quash. That sounds like a rock and roll song when you're listening to it. It's kind of different from what you're used to doing. I'm just interested in how you made decisions on who to invite and the thought process in making that really a different sound from the previous recordings that you've done and certainly what you do on the road.
Each track was different. First of all, the concept of Canvas, how that whole concept and even the artwork on the front came about, was to abandon any preconceived notions or previous patterns of our musicality, to try and just like detach from everything. Start with a clean slate, a fresh canvas. That was the whole concept for the music on this record. And with that in mind, it led us down different roads. There were tendencies along the way where it's like, I don't think that works, you know, and then it's like, well, wait now. You don't think it works because it hasn't worked in the past because you've confined it to a certain way. Don't have fear about that. Don't latch on to something, to a preconceived notion. Just let that go for a minute, and let's follow this down the road a little further. And it was through doing that we came up with different concepts that wouldn't have been allowed to enter previously. Not by intention, but just by something way back in the mind. We just made a very open awareness to try and let go of restrictions. So that said, when we went through each track, Danelle would often say, let the music decide. And it's hard to know how to get into that mind frame, but you can get there. Let the music decide. We're very spiritual people, religious and faithful, and sometimes we feel like we need to be more of an open vessel so that the divine can inspire. And not comparing this music with anything divine, but I do believe that we were a more open vessel through many parts of this creation. And so that led to, for example, the piece of music called So You Love. We got down a certain road and it just kept evolving and we were loving where it was going. And then when we were going to record it, I think it was Danelle that said, you know what, maybe there should be another instrument taking this part. Because we kept back and forth about, oh, should you take that part? Should I take that part? Because there was like 6 or 7 different parts. Who takes which part? Danelle had suggested maybe someone else should be, maybe a third party should be entering here. And of course, my mind of the past would say, no, let's keep this to ourselves so that when we tour live with it, we don't need other people and it's more fluid and we can just do it ourselves. I kind of let go of that restriction. And then we started experimenting with thoughts of, oh my gosh, maybe harmonica, maybe a trumpet player, maybe like all these crazy things we'd never think of. Now, when it got to the cello, I mean, we tried hearing those sounds and we thought nothing was as more soothing as the cello. And so we went with that and then we're like, okay, who are we going to call? Well, let's go start with the best. I mean, it was COVID. We knew that Yo-Yo Ma couldn't say, I'm busy. I'm performing that day. Like, that wasn't happening for anybody. This is when everything was shut down. So I guess our timing was right. And he was like, yeah, sure. You know, I've got the time. Let's do it.
Well, he's done a lot of different collaborations, I know, and that gets to spin off of what you just said, because I have this conversation with musicians often from the standpoint that musicians have open ears. They like to listen to everything and get ideas, and eventually it helps change what they're doing or create something new from what they're doing. And it seems that this is exactly what happened during COVID for a lot of musicians. They started doing just what you did. They get in touch with people and start collaborating in different ways. And suddenly there's a different sound that is just unique to what you can do with others.
Yeah.
Kind of related to that, I wanted to ask you about what I saw in a video at the end of the East Coast Music Awards. It looked like that was Mary Frances playing keyboards and getting up and dancing at the end.
She plays piano with us now in the band and dances. And actually, she came about through COVID. She really took on a lot at that time. Like, she got turned on. She was like, oh my gosh, I have all this time. She practiced like crazy. And because we couldn't fly in our piano player and our band for things, in those moments, it's like we really only have ourselves to rely on. We've got to work with what is here. You know, people aren't even allowed to get on airplanes and all this kind of stuff. We just had to use our own family. And because Mary Frances was practicing so much, she was getting really good. And so we're like, okay, Mary Frances, we want you to play on this and it's going to be recorded. She just improved so dramatically. And it has led to her being our main piano player now. That's because it's so good for her, but she's also good enough to play with us. Otherwise, you know, we don't know how much longer we'll have her. She'll be off to college here and those things. So this is a great opportunity for her. She's really come tremendous way. And she's also an incredible dancer. So that's probably what explains why the video. Incidentally, the project Canvas, that CD, everything was shut down. We got our own studio gear, and that's where we did most of the record within our house. But the spinoff was Mary Frances. With all this practicing and playing and stuff, she kind of got into the studio room. She was fascinated with the gear, and one thing led to another. She started writing material and recording it and then building on it, and making her own tracks and arranging things. This all flourished during this time to the point where I said to her, you should make your own CD. She thought it was a joke at first, and then as time went on, she thought, yeah, I will. And so she has a new CD, and it's going to be out in a week.
Is there something I should have asked you about this tour and your music that you would like to address?
I would just say that we're really excited to play. I mean, I'm still aware of the fact that this didn't exist for us a couple of years ago because of the pandemic. I'm just really grateful. I have such gratitude for someone went and found us a crowd. Someone went and found us an audience. That would be the theater. When I stand on stage before everyone, I look and I think, someone brought us all these people. Sure, they used our names, they used our assets, they used their own marketing tools and all the strategies involved in that. But it wasn't me calling everybody up person to person, say, hi, would you come to our show? No, somebody did that work. They found us an audience. And I am so grateful for that. I can't wait to just get in front of them all and present what we've been working on.